just start, you know, take the leap. I've done it myself multiple times. So I've taken the leap and fail fast. Make sure that you're just trying. And I think from my personal experience, all I have always tried to do is at least give it a go. You know, don't just die wondering.
Welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast, where we talk all things business, Web3 and NFTs. We're on a mission to educate, elevate and empower women into the world of Web3. So join us on this journey as we learn together from leading experts. And remember, this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. So please do your own research and enjoy today's episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sisterhood Club podcast with myself, Georgie Hubbard.
And me, Pam Caldwell.
And today we are... We're always excited, but we are particularly excited today because we've already had an incredible conversation with this amazing woman. Outside of this podcast, we have very similar passions and interests. So today we're joined by Vicky Sterling, the CEO of Startup Vic. Vicky, incredible to have you here today on the podcast. I would love to know a little bit about yourself, your journey to where you are today. So over to you, Vicky. Amazing to have you here today.
Thank you so much. Great to be on the Sisterhood Club. It's lovely to be one of the sisters this evening. So what is my journey? Wow. Well, I always go back to, you know, really how I got my passion for product. And that was when I spent a number of years at Nike, at their European headquarters in Amsterdam. I worked there for 8 years and really learned a lot about product and how it works for, you know, how important it is for our customer, how important it is for the community. And just from there, I just really just fell in love with building products. And that was from a physical product sense and also from a digital product sense. So later in my career, I went to work for a startup called Redbubble. We really, you know, it was really gritty and we were really just doing everything to just try and get things happening. And we saw that business go from really early stage startup all the way through IPO. And that was a really great experience for me. And that gave me my startup bug. And then I did a bit of freelance work for a number of years for startups, just helping them on product strategy. And then I started here as the CEO of Startup Vic about 12 months ago. And here I am.
Wow.
That is amazing. And just when you say Nike, I love how you say that. I call it Nike. Oh. Doesn't sound quite as nice and Scottish, does it? But what a brand and what an innovative company to have had exposure to. So can I just like hop on there for a moment? Because I think when you actually get exposure to working for a brand like that, it's not an experience that everyone actually gets to have. So could you just like touch on like what were your sort of key learnings in terms of like your career when you worked at Nike, and you know, the innovation and the creativity that you must have been exposed to in there must have been absolutely phenomenal. What were the key learnings sort of working for a brand like that?
Oh gosh. Well, first of all, you know, we always had our maxims, and the maxim that I always loved was innovate or die. And it's something that I still live by today. I think it's one of the most important maxims to think of, and, you know, to just think about that every single day. You know, what are we doing that's new, that's fresh, that's interesting, that's going to excite the customer? That's a really powerful thing to have in your, you know, when you're thinking every day. And you know, something else I learned about was the matrix structure, the lack of hierarchy. And I really, it took me, you know, in Nike, I was a product manager. You know, I had a team of a couple of people and, but we were all just working on these ideas together. There was never any, you never really felt like there were bosses as such. It was always just one team trying to achieve one goal, actually lots of goals, and trying to get a lot of stuff done together. And I just loved that. I loved how different that was to the structure I'd learned about in, you know, my very first job outside of university, which was very hierarchical and old school and English. And then moving to Nike was just a totally different experience and really gave me this understanding that actually leadership doesn't have to be about hierarchy. Leadership doesn't have to be about top down. Leadership's about how we enable a team and how we engage a team to get really amazing stuff done every single day. And it was certainly a play hard, work hard mentality, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you've just touched on something really important there as well, because I think this is why so many people are drawn to the startup scene, that whole like innovation, moving quickly. I think the bigger the company sometimes and the more people at the top, that can really slow down the innovation. And that's probably why Nike is what it is, because I've also just, you know, seen being Web3, Nike have also just entered Web3 and they're going to do some amazing things in that space. But Nike are just constantly innovating. They're constantly like looking ahead. I'd love to sort of tie it back now to obviously, you know, startups and what sort of really got you passionate and interested in that sort of space. I mean, I'm imagining you mentioned innovation there. You mentioned like that sort of fast-paced leadership, but what really kind of got you into that world and excited about that?
Yeah, I think it does feel, when you join a startup, it always feels, every day, it feels like it's your business. And you're so invested in making it a success. You know, that's what a great culture in a startup really does. It makes you believe that the success and failure of this company is your success and failure. It's your company. And I just think that you don't get that when you're working in a corporate environment. You don't get the, you know, yes, you have to work long days and late nights when you're working in a corporate environment, but it's different when you're working in a startup because it feels like yours. It feels personal. And, you know, great leaders, great founders really engage the entire team on their own journey, on their personal mission. And if you feel passionate about that personal mission yourself, then it's yours and you can own it and run with it. And I think that's what I love about being in part of a startup is that, yeah, you can really engage with the vision of the founder and go on that journey with them through the highs and lows and all the pains. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And I think in terms of like that whole, the startup land, like I know like you personally, you say when you're in a startup, it takes a village.
Yes.
And I love that sentiment. You know, I sort of adhere it to raising children as well. And it's like, yes, you know, I've got my business babies and I've got my actual babies, right? But in both senses of the world, it absolutely does take a village. And I'm absolutely, you know, so grateful to have Georgie and Kyle by my side as we've scaled, sort of grown our businesses over the years. In terms of that kind of concept, like what do you feel are the sort of key recipes for, you know, for launching a startup, you know, in terms of what do you see, what do you think are the key pillars of those, you know, what sort of village do you need to sort of begin?
Yeah, it's a really good question, actually. I think the need to have amazing supporters, you know, and a community that really understands you and really gets you is vital. So, you know, it's obviously, you know, you need to have cash around you. So having the right investors is really important, and having the right team, an early team. So the right co-founder is really important. Mm. Especially if you're a non-technical founder, having the right co-founder is really important. But having a community outside of work is really vital, because what you find when you start to become a founder is all of your peers, all of the people you went to university with, all of your you know, your family members, your partner, you know, they all got you when you were working in the world of work, right? Everyone's pains are the same. You're all going through the same things, and you're like, yeah, my boss is a pain, or you know, really, you know, just really struggling with a colleague. All of those things we all can appreciate, and we can all relate to. But when you're a founder, all of a sudden it becomes very lonely, because the advice you need is very, very different. The support, you know, nobody else is going out raising $1 million. No one else is going out writing pitch decks to investors and having to sit in front of investors to get a bit of money. It's, you know, it's a very lonely journey. So having a community around you that have been there and gone through those processes before you is super vital. And that's where Startup Fit really comes into its fruition, is that need for that. Excuse me, I have a dog.
They obviously agree with everything you're saying, Vicky. So, you know, they're your biggest fans.
Very enthusiastic about this conversation. I just love it.
Oh, that's hilarious. But listen, I completely agree with everything you just said there. I think the importance of one co-founder, I would not be where I am today without Pam. And I know she feels exactly the same way. We pull each other up when we need it. We keep each other in check. You know, we're constantly having these conversations. And then you're right, like thinking about the community around you. And that's something that with Sisterhood Club now, we're really trying to foster and build that importance of community, that importance of, you know, just having, just being able to be vulnerable. Like the amount of conversations we've had recently with business owners, with project founders, with people in leadership roles that, you know, they're saying things to us that you just go, oh my God, thank you for being so honest and vulnerable and open, because this isn't the sort of conversations that happen in business very often. We all just see the pinnacle of the iceberg, which I talk about a lot, is like the success, but we don't see what goes on below that. We don't see the loneliness. We don't see the sacrifices, the things that you have to miss out on in order to build a business, right? Yeah. So can we talk a little bit about that, Vicky? Because I think so many people love the idea of having a business. So many people love the idea of having, you know, starting something. But what does a typical day look like in the life of a founder? Like, what are some of the things like that you see? Where do people like fall down? And what advice would you have for somebody that is thinking about starting something?
I think a lot of the time, honestly, it is because people think that they can do it alone. And so that's a big stumbling block that I see often. And I don't know why people believe that it's, you know, I think sometimes it's about ownership. You know, this is my baby. It is like giving up your baby, you know. If you start to think about having to hand over half of that to a co-founder or to an investment group, that it becomes a challenge, because you've built this thing and then all of a sudden someone's going to take half of it away from you. But you can't think of it like that. You have to think of it like a family, you know, and again, like, you know, it's the two parents trying to help raise this child, not you on your own. And so I think that's one of the biggest things, is this desire to try and go it all by yourself. Please don't. Please reach out. Please get advisors. Please get supporters. Please get, if you can get a co-founder, get a co-founder, because that's just going to have that other person to take the strain away from you. I think another big mistake people make is they say, oh, yes, I'm going to get a co-founder and I'm going to select this person, and because they're just like me. And that's the worst thing you can do, is get a co-founder who has exactly the same skills as you. The whole, you know, the whole premise of a co-founder is that they're filling the gaps of the skills that you don't have. So if you're, you know, a product expert or a marketing expert, then please go for somebody who's way more technical, can support the technical side of things. Or if you're, if you're the technical expert, you might need somebody who is really amazing in business and really understands how to communicate with the business community and get those investors on your side. So, you know, that's a really important part of it. And then the other mistake that I think I see often is people looking for investment too early. So it's really important that you get your product validated, and you can get your product validated in many ways. If it's a digital product, it's very easy to build an MVP these days, a no-code MVP, to get your product out there to market, to get your product validated in some way. And if you can get your product validated, then you need to make sure that helps, because that ensures that you've got a consumer group ready, and you know, you've got a group of people that actually want to buy your product. So, and the other thing that's really important is something that I think a lot of people just miss or don't think about as much, is building that mailing list. So getting those expressions of interest for your product. You know, the bigger the mailing list, the bigger the expressions of interest, the more that validates as well that people are interested in this idea, that this is something that people want. So, you know, building the validation, spending time on that validation, spending time reworking it. And, you know, maybe, you know, you might build your value proposition 3 or 4 times because you realize that actually when you tried to validate that idea, it turned out that actually it was something else that somebody wanted, not the thing that we were going to build initially. So, you know, there's all of these nuances that come out as you start to do the research and the insights. And so really important that you get a really clear validation of what it is that you want to build before you build a thing and before you go and look for investment. So make sure you've got that right.
Yeah, that's such absolutely solid advice. And you must see so many pitch decks come through. And, you know, obviously Startup Vic hosts a lot of pitch nights. And, you know, Pam and I have been to quite a few of them. And what always fascinates me, and I know we're going to go into this, which is kind of tying in beautifully, is when I do watch the pitches, the difference between men and women. And just the way I think men hold themselves, the way men speak, and then I watch women. And this is just a recent thing that happened. So this might not be all pitch nights, but this is just a couple of things that I've witnessed recently. The female comes on, she's clearly a lot more nervous, doesn't speak with as much authority in her voice. Like, what are you seeing in this, in the Startup Vic world, and why do you think that is? I'd love to sort of go down now that path of like female entrepreneurship, females in startups, the stats around it. But let's start with the pitch nights first and foremost.
I think this is a this is a really good point, actually. I think there's something to be said for when we have all female pitchers on the pitch night and when we have mix of male and female pitchers on the pitch night. It's really fascinating how the women all lift each other up. And, you know, the first person is always a little bit more nervous, but, you know, you can see them supporting each other and lifting each other up. And, you know, by the time it gets to the end, it's like, yes, a party, we all did it, we all got through this together. And it's a really lovely feeling. When we have a blend of male and female, I definitely see that. I definitely see that there is, you know, a bit of trepidation, but also I also think the women often have got the better product, and it's about the confidence and the it's always about confidence, you know, and I think often it's because prior to the pitch night, they've not really had the confidence to sell this idea to many people, and they've kept it themselves. We hear more times than I care to remember, I've heard, gosh, this was the very first time I've pitched my idea to anyone, and I did it in a room of 150 people. And now I've done this, I can go on and pitch this anywhere. All of a sudden, I have this ability to do something that I didn't realize I could do. And I hear that a lot from the women. I think the men have got generally a much better support group around them. They have people in their network that have maybe pitched before or are executives in an organization, so they can run that through with them a number of times. But women don't seem to have that. They don't seem to have the those networks around them just naturally that they can share this stuff with and present openly to without fear of criticism, of pushback, of being told your idea's no good, which, let me tell you, I've heard it many times. I know many other women have heard it many times. You know, your idea will never go anywhere. You need to change it completely. And, you know, it's because often the males that we're presenting to or talking to about our problems, they don't understand our problem because they're men and we're women and we're approaching our problem in a different way. And so because they have no empathy for the problem, they think that it's a problem no one has. And Yeah, I think understanding who you should talk to, who you should share your pitch with, and getting that voiced as many times as you can before you go up to pitch is really powerful. And just rehearse and rehearse and rehearse that pitch until you're reading it in your sleep is the other tip that I always give people. It should feel seamless. It should feel like you can stand there in front of a crowd of investors or peers and be able to stand up there with confidence. Yeah.
Mm. I almost feel, do you feel like pitch nights actually get the best out of people, right? Because I often think, like, is this just like a really outdated way of getting people to present like their business ideas, their products? Like, is that actually the best way to do it? Because it's just, I think I take it back to like a recruitment sense, and in terms of like the way that people interview now, it has evolved slightly in terms of like people are allowed to, you know, share their portfolio, share pieces of their work, you know, maybe do like, if it's a dev, you're allowed to do a coding set, sort of like do sort of problem solving coding tests, just to like sort of more showcase your skills. And there's more of an awareness now that interviewing is like more from like a two-way process. And, you know, questions are presented in a certain way that people feel as though they're able to share a story rather than being, you know, dictated to. And I often think that pitches, they're actually quite unnatural to me. And I think, like, you know, if I was to start, I'm fairly assertive female. I've also worked in tech recruitment for a while, so I'm used to sitting around a boardroom in like male dominated environments, but that isn't environments that a lot of women have been exposed to, you know, throughout their careers. And have you saw any innovative ways where you know, you've been sitting in like, you know, with VCs or, you know, at these sort of pitch nights, have you saw any sort of innovative ways that have actually seemed to get the best out of people? Have there been different ways that you've seen people presenting?
Yeah, definitely. I think what I really like that enables people who maybe less extrovert and more introvert in their style is for people to record their pitch while they're going through their slides. And now, you know, it's possible now, Canva now have an option to be able to video yourself presenting the pitch, and it's visible in the top corner of your slides as you're speaking, and you can go through your slides and speak at the same time. Now, those really get my attention, because, you know, there's nothing worse than just receiving, there's a lot of things worse, but, you know, when I receive 80 pitch decks and I have to review all 80 pitch decks and give them my best assessment with only the slides and no narration, no understanding of the messages really behind the slides, it's really difficult to know the full story. Even if it's a really excellent pitch, it's often really difficult to grasp the full story with just a pitch deck. And so when you have somebody recording their script and themselves at the same time as going through their slides, it's so helpful. And it really enables me to make a better decision, because I can hear, you know, I can hear the presenter, I can hear the passion, I can understand the story behind the presentation. And it's just a much more engaging way to present. So I think that still works. And I do think there is power in a pitch deck, if it's the right pitch deck, and it contains the right information. You know, the storytelling is really powerful, understanding, you know, your rationale and your problem that you're trying to solve. And then hearing about the validation and the people that you've already tested this idea with, and, you know, where you are in your stage of traction and how much traction you already have with customers. These things are really important, because they help to judge whether or not they've got validation. And so I think there is important. I do love the idea of, you know, assessing a person for their skills outside of pitching, because those founders, you know, if they speak to an investor, that investor might say, hey, actually, I think you're a really great human. I think your idea really probably isn't going to go anywhere, but I would love you to come and work as a co-founder for this other person I know, right? So there's other ways to get in front of investors and sell yourself and sell who you are as an individual. And it's not always easy to do that just through your 12 slides or your 5-minute pitch. So I think there is something in what you're saying, Pam, around being able to do things a little bit differently and have an alternative style, not just presenting slides on a story.
Yeah, 100%. I think you've just made some really good points there about sort of what to include in a pitch deck as well. But from what I'm just hearing, it was very much sort of focused around, obviously, you know, what problem you're solving, what's, you know, who's your customer, but also like, have you tested the product? Like, do you have something to back it up? And I think going back to what you said earlier, and Vicky, I think that's quite a really important point, because I think too many people probably do try and go for VC money far too early before they've proven market fit. But the other thing I always say as well, and I always think this, is like, sometimes you just got to begin, right? Like, there's no such thing as perfect. And Pam and I always say it as well, it's like progress over perfection. Like, any business we've started, we've not really gone, right, 10 years now, this is the business plan, this is what's going to happen, because you can't really do that anymore. The world is changing at such a rapid rate. Technology is evolving every single week, you know, let alone years. So I think that where the world is right now in the startup scene, you know, that needs to be taken into consideration. But I would love to sort of go into a little bit more detail, because when you and I first spoke, it was very much around female entrepreneurship, you know, how can we get more women into sort of, you know, funding businesses and things. So what advice, right? We've got a large female audience, and there might be, I'm sure there is, some women listening to this right now that maybe have an idea, but, you know, they, at the minute, you know, they're trying to juggle work, being a mom, you know, family life. Like, how can we support more women who want to go after their dreams, who want to start something? Like, what should we be doing? And yeah, what sort of advice would you give for a female woman listening to this right now who wants to start something?
I think, just start, you know, take the leap. I've done it myself multiple times. So I've taken the leap and fail fast. You know, make sure that you're just trying. And I think from my personal experience, all I have always tried to do is at least give it a go. You know, don't just die wondering. You might have fallen upon something that really is a problem that everybody has, but you've never really spoken about it to anyone. And there's some really quick and easy ways that you can test that, whether or not you should give it a go or get started. You know, you could do a Facebook survey and just put it out to a group that you're a part of and ask the Facebook survey about whether the community on that Facebook survey, on that Facebook group is interested in your idea. You could validate an idea just by, you know, print out flyers and hand them out, giving, we love QR codes these days, sending people to a really simple website through a QR code. Just really just get out there and start talking about your idea to as many people as possible. And once you start talking about your idea, you start to realize that other people might have that problem too. And other people think that that's a great idea. But don't keep it to yourself. I think a lot of us, especially women, we're a bit worried that, oh, if I give this idea away, somebody else is going to take it. And that, I think that's a societal thing too. We're so afraid of, if I tell somebody about this, somebody's going to take it on. Somebody else is going to take it on. It's not, you know, that could happen, but then that wasn't your journey, right? I really believe in this as well, that, you know, we've got to be really transparent about our dreams and our ideas and talk about them openly. And if somebody else takes that idea and makes it amazing, good on them. You know, that wasn't your idea to have. Go for a different idea. You know, we've just got to keep moving. Just keep moving through it. And eventually you will find the thing that you're meant to be doing, the thing that you're meant to be creating your life around. I know I haven't found my thing yet. I love my job, but I would love to have a side hustle that's successful. And I just keep flowing through and I just keep trying something new. And eventually something that will come along that I'm so passionate about, so deeply passionate about, that I can't stop working on it. And I'll know that that's the thing that I'm going to spend the rest of my life doing.
Mm-hmm. There are so many ways that I could go now, and I'm just dying to say this, because you've said some really important things there. But I think the biggest thing, and I'd love to sort of understand this and why women do this. But what I hear sometimes is that women sometimes hold back their ideas more because of the judgment that they're going to get actually from their female friends. Like, who are you to start that, right? And it's really interesting. I just feel like you clearly haven't found your tribe. And that's why we're building Sisterhood Club, right? Because the idea is we're sisters, we support each other, we champion each other, we cheer each other on, right? But there is this kind of like, oh, who do you think you are kind of attitude that I think, unfortunately, some women do experience from other women, which is so sad. Like, you know, we're already at a disadvantage being women as it is, trying to start businesses in this very male dominated world.
Yeah.
Why don't we support one another? Like, why can't we get behind one another and cheer each other on? Like, yeah, I'm always open to having these conversations because it's not something that I'm just not like that. I'm always like, if someone's got an idea, I'm like, you need to go for it.
Yeah,
but unfortunately, women don't always have that experience. So, what advice would you give for a woman that maybe is experiencing that right now, like a support? Yeah.
Gosh, find new friends for sure. It's a tough one, right? In Australia, we definitely have the tall poppy syndrome.
Yeah.
And that's a thing. You know, I'm English, and, you know, I've come here and I can see it happening. I can see, who are you to have taken this? And, you know, why do you think that's going to be successful? And there's, you know, maybe there is some envy there, but I always try to look within. I don't want to look at the others. I try to look within and say, well, you know, that's your pain. That's what you're dealing with. That's not mine to carry. So that's just, you know, that's my own personal philosophy in life. I've come up against that many times. You know, whether that's envy in the workplace from your leadership position, whether it's envy of a business idea, whether it's envy of a lifestyle you have. Yes, that happens, but that's not for me to take on. That's for the other. Why are women envious of other women? Probably because they wish they could do it too. They wish that they'd had that idea. They wish that they had the courage and the resource and the ability to step out of their comfort zone and say, I'm just going to go for this. And I think that's often the reason that other women might feel that way is because they wish they had it. They wish that they had the courage to step out and do this, and they don't. I would just try and encourage people not to take it on. Try and live your own truth. That's all you can do is live for yourself and live for your own truth and let everybody else deal with their own shit by themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like that's just like so powerful what you said earlier just about don't die wondering. There's just so much in that statement alone. You know, like get out there and give things a try. Like, and if you don't, someone else will. And I do feel that in terms of like holding back on your ideas and sitting with something, like there is nothing more powerful than saying it out loud and share those ideas. Like find your community, find your tribe that you can actually share these ideas with, and you will find like together we can achieve so much. And just by like sharing ideas and getting other people's opinions, if you're in a room with the right people and you surround yourself by the right people, the ideas and the juices that will come flowing off of your own original idea will just be absolutely outstanding. And it could evolve into something that you couldn't even have imagined, right? But if you sit and you just keep your idea to yourself, you know, that's all it's ever going to be. So it's just like there's so much power in that, like that just start is so true.
100%. You also mentioned something earlier as well, Vicky. You've talked a lot about passion. How important is it? Because we talk a lot about like, you know, you've got to be passionate. And I think, yes, you absolutely do for the long run, right? But sometimes, like for example, right, I'm going to use Pam and I as an example. We have a recruitment company. Now, recruitment, I'm just going to say it, it's probably not something I'm deeply passionate about, right? But it's a successful business. And what it's allowed me to do is then go on and build Sisterhood Club, which I am very passionate about. How important is it, like, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, you want to get started, you see a problem that needs to be solved, maybe you're not wildly passionate about it. Do you think that's really important to have this deep passion for it? Or do you think you could just sort of get started with an idea and just go for it?
I actually think that it's much easier if you have a deep passion for it, because if you have a deep passion, you can achieve so much in the time you have. You can get into your flow, and you know how time just disappears when you're in your flow, and you can achieve huge amounts. And so when we're talking about the very early stages of a startup and the very early stages of an idea where you're you know, figuring out, how do I build a website? I don't know. I'm just going to work that out myself. I'm sure I can YouTube that somehow. You know, when you're working all that stuff out, then that's the important time to have a real passion for it and to really spend the energy, put all of your energy into it. We all know, if we all have a hard task to do, it can be a task that, you know, might only take you half an hour to complete, but you could procrastinate about doing that task for 3 weeks before you actually get round to it, right? So not having the passion for something just means that the whole process will take longer, in my experience. But having a passion, having a deep desire to achieve something and to solve a problem and to figure out all of the solutions around the problem, that's where the drive comes, and that's where you get a lot done. And I think that that's really important, that when you're in a startup, you need to have the passion, because it's not something you can just plug away at from 9 till 5 and then leave alone. You're going to be, you know, usually, actually, women as founders, we usually still do our 9 to 5 jobs, and then we feed our children, we put them to bed, and then we start working on our passion project, right? And that's why it's called a passion project, because you can put the energy into it when you're totally spent and you've done your full day's work and you've looked after your children, and you can still find the energy for that project. And that's why I think passion is super important.
And I think like that is so powerful. Like, for example, with Sisterhood Club at the moment, I do genuinely feel, I wake up and I feel so energized and just like ready to go get the day. And you know, there's some things that we do out with like our usual 9 to 5 at the moment, like, for not 9 to 5 because it's like a 24/7 job, but for, you know, like Tuesdays and Thursdays we're showing up at 7 to 9 a.m. we run Twitter spaces on top of the podcast and then all the day-to-day activities that it takes to run a business. But I don't feel exhausted by it. When I get to a Friday, I'm like pumped. I'm like, right, what are we doing at the weekend? Should we get in the Discord and run a community session? And rah, you know, love a good chat. But in terms of female founders in the space and females that are coming to the pitch nights, in your experience, like, what are the key things that actually hold a female founder back from starting and from pursuing their ideas? Because I'm just sort of thinking, like, in terms of like as a community, and what problems are we trying to solve there? Like, what are the main things that hold people back from hitting the start button?
Look, I think often, so from the people I see, and you know, we see a lot of people coming through, and amazing women with great ideas, but often that idea needs some work, and it needs to be evolved, but it's sometimes really hard to hear that feedback. What disappoints me often is when women hear that feedback, it's not the direction that they want to take the product, and so they give up at the first hurdle, right? And those are I think that's a shame, because a product could become something amazing if you were to take on feedback and advice and insights and maybe pivot a little bit to doing something new. But those that do take on that advice and are successful to a certain level, in that they get to pitch and then they've got somebody who's interested in their idea, and so they start to have coffees and start to talk to potential investors. The one thing that I hear over and over again that stops them from going all in or stops them from progressing any further is the lack of money. And you know, we hear it all over and over again. And you know, we just saw, you know, Deloitte's report this year, fiscal year 22, 0.7% of funding going to all female founded businesses. It's a disgrace. And that's based on $10 billion Okay, $10 billion in fiscal year 21. I don't know what the number was in fiscal year 22, but you know, even if it was close to $10 billion, 0.7% of that going to female founder business is outrageous. But we have, you know, there are amazing organizations out there that are helping female founders. SBE and Scale Investors are two that I just think are fabulous. Tractive Ventures as well, with Jodi Immam, really doing a great job of supporting female founders. But the money is not going into the female founder. And so, you know, they can be emailing out to 100 investors after they've done their pitch deck. And, you know, we've given them the feedback and they've got a great pitch and they've got a great product. So they start emailing investors and saying, I've got a product, I'd love to talk to you. No feedback, no feedback, no feedback, over and over again. And it's disheartening. And, you know, you can only receive so many negative feedbacks or zero feedbacks. It's like recruiting, you know, it's like applying for jobs. You know, when you, the more you apply and the more you get kickback, you start to doubt yourself. You just start to doubt your abilities. And so you start to apply for lower level roles. And the same with, you know, they start to pull back on their pitch decks and say, maybe it wasn't such a great idea after all. Maybe I don't have anything. And that negativity just festers within them. And what I really am passionate about is making sure that they have a place to go, where they have somewhere to come, where they're going to be heard, where their pitch is going to be seen, where they're going to be encouraged to keep applying, where they can put their hat in a ring again and again and again and not feel like it's a wasted effort. I think that's what we really need to do for women and to help them on their journey, is just be there, encouraging them, telling them how amazing they are, telling them what a great idea they are, and telling them not to stop. Just don't stop trying, because it will come. Sometimes it just takes longer than we expect. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately,
I know we've both got loads of things that we want to say here, so I'll just say, like, buy one piece and then I'm going to pass the baton
straight to you.
But I do, honestly, Vicky, it's in terms of rejection, for some reason, for a female, hits hard.
Yeah.
Hard.
And
really
I see
hard.
It, like, people, because we've obviously got a recruitment business, we see people, you cannot just reach out and do business development and get a no and go, oh my God. But it's almost like the rejection then sort of festers. Mm-hmm. The more no's that come, it festers and it turns into, like, embarrassment. Yeah. It hits the self-esteem and it just goes off on this spiral, which is why I feel it all comes back to the core fundamentals of really working on yourself, knowing who you are, believing in yourself. That self-belief is such an important fundamental skill to develop and work on in yourself. And that's why Georgie and I are both incredibly passionate about personal growth, because you have got to be almost rock solid, because if you are going to be a founder, if you want to start your own business, you need to be able to get knocked down time and time and time again and get back up fighting. And self-belief is just such a fundamental skill to develop. And that's obviously why we're so passionate about, you know, having some of the courses that are in the Sisterhood Club and the Sisterhood School. But you're going to get battle scars, and it's the power of community as well, is that do not feel alone. We all experience it. We've all had the no's. But Georgie and I have this thing. We say we do not say no. We flip it. We say we see game on, right? And if someone gives you a no, it's either just, it's not a no, it's a not right now, or you're speaking to the wrong person. Yeah. And I think if you just get really good at, like, either brushing it off if you think that that's not the right person for you, or like that, brilliant, you've just told me no. Why? Give me the why. Give me the negative feedback that you see. Pick holes in my pitch. Tell me about that. Why is it a no? Go work on it and come out shining again. You know, so it's like seeing the opportunity in every no, I think, is just absolutely so powerful. So thank you so much for sharing those little nuggets there. That was brilliant.
Yeah, I just feel like Pam just absolutely ran with that. And I completely agree with everything you just said. And Vicky, it's like these are the sorts of stats that get Pam and I absolutely fired up, right? And but yeah, you're so right. I think it is that self-worth, that self-belief, knowing that you're enough, not tying your sense of worth into your business and your product and your idea, right? It's like being whole as a person. But but those little chips, those little rejections, those little no can chip away at you unless you are so frigging strong, which is why mindset is just, oh my God, I could talk about it till the cows come home. But your mindset, your determination, your tenacity, your belief in yourself has got to be so strong. And that's why, again, you do need your supporters. You do need the people around you. So on those days, which we all have, where you're like, oh, I don't think I can send another email today. I can't do it. You just need someone to go, yes, you bloody well can. And you will. You need your why plastered across the wall so you remember why you're doing it. And it's on those days that I think community and people around you matter so much. And that's why I love what Startup Vic do, because you are just, you're in the space, you're on the ground, you're helping women. Mm-hmm. You're just building this incredible brand and company that is out there to help people who need it. So I love to know, Vicky, like since you've joined Startup Vic, you've only been there for 12 months. Like what impact do you want to have at Startup Vic? Like what are you sort of working on right now and how do you sort of see your role evolve?
Yeah, thank you. I'm so passionate about how Startup Vic is evolving. Like you say, less than 12 months, but we've already done a great deal. But what I'm passionate about seeing is enabling us to connect these small community groups all over every industry of a startup, whether you are a startup of a non-technical product, whether you're a startup of a SaaS company, whoever you are, I want to be able to connect you to an amazing person who's already been there and done that, and a group of people that are just starting out. And that's really, really powerful if we do that on a very micro basis. So thinking about all the new product ideas that are coming out, all the new technologies that are coming out, whatever you're in, whether you're into robotics, whether you're into machine learning, whether you're into ag tech, or whether you're into fashion design, whatever your startup is in, we should have a microcosm community of people start headed by an amazing founder that can support those incredible idea people, because that's how these next big businesses are going to come out, by those little tiny groups of people really supporting each other. And, you know, we see it happening all the time at Startup Vic when, you know, I can just email somebody who, you know, yesterday, for example, I had a chat with a girl who has an idea about a product in banking. And I was able to connect her to somebody who works in that industry, who has already created an amazing business, who would be able to support them. And I love being able to do that. But I can't do that for every single person with an idea in Australia. So the idea of Startup Vic is that we can create that at scale. So we can create a product that enables that to happen. So a founder can put in all of their details and say, hey, this is who I am. This is the kind of industry I work in. This is the kind of support I'm looking for. And an investor or advisor or a founder who has been there before them can do the same, and they can match up. So it's like a kind of speed dating, if you like, for founders, that enables people to connect and talk to each other about their problems and help solve problems for them. So I really see that being a really powerful thing for us going forward.
Oh, absolutely. Just connecting that Startup Vic network and bringing founders together, meeting people, that's
so powerful.
Solving such a big problem there, and that sort of whole networking thing. But Vicky, honestly, I could sit and just chat away to you all day. I feel like we could have some really deep conversations, but I want to respect your time. So where can we send people to find out more about yourself, Startup Vic, all of the incredible events that you're doing? Where can we send people?
Yes, come to our website, www.startupvictoria.com.au, and check us out. You can find events of ours on Eventbrite. We usually have a pitch night every month on the last Tuesday of every month. It's always a good hoot. There's a lot of fun, a lot of great people in the audience. There's always a vibe going on. And if you just want to become a member of Startup Victoria, you can do that really easily. It's as little as $10 a month or $100 a year. And yeah, it's a really great community for you to be a part of. So yeah, come and join us. The more the merrier. The more women, the merrier.
Yes. More women, the merrier. That's
we'll make
right.
sure we put all of the links in the show notes below. But Vicky, thank you so much for being on today. You've been an amazing guest, and I'm sure that our audience will get a lot from this podcast. And to everyone who's listened today, I hope that you've enjoyed, and we'll see you again soon. Take care. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. And if you did, please give a little share on your social. And if you have time, please leave a review. And I hope to see you next time. Take care.